And a very good morning to you. How you doing? It's a wet, not so windy, but wet and miserable Sunday morning here in South Manchester. December 2nd, just over 3 weeks to go till Christmas. Yeah, you looking forward to that? Have you had a good weekend? Are you in fine fettle this Sunday morning? Thanks for tuning into Sunday View. Thank you. We're live right now on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, richieallen.co.uk, and of course the programme streams 24/7 on TuneIn Radio. Check it out, TuneIn Radio. Going to look at the front pages of the Sunday newspapers, and we're going to have a chat, you and me. Why not? Let's have a chat then.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Tell you now, I didn't think I'd make it this morning, but I did make it, thankfully. I'll tell you why in a minute. If you're interested, you might not be. Welcome to Sunday View. Tweet the programme right now. It's at Richie Allen Show. Talk to me.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, it is at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. As we go through the stories I'll be covering today, do get in touch and tell me what you think. I'll be delighted to hear from you, and I'll be reading out the tweets as I go along. Want to say hi, if she's listening, she might very well be in bed, to the amazing Jean-Anne Crowley. Unbelievable woman, great friend of mine, tremendous actress, has been in London in the last few days performing at theatres there, including at the Irish Embassy in London, performing Mary Kenny's one-woman play about Countess Markovic, Constance Markovic. Wonderful stuff. And the reviews are stellar for that. So congratulations to Jean-Anne. Wonderful friend and a great supporter of this programme and the independent media. Good stuff. Well, well. Do you know, I'm very proud of myself. This weekend sees just over 2 weeks since I last had a drink. I've been off the drink. Now, why are you off the drink, Richie? Were you caning it, son? No. But I suppose I could be described as a steady drinker. I would have a glass of wine or two, maybe two or three nights a week. No more than two now. But at weekends, I would have a few drinks watching the football and relaxing and that. And I thought I was getting a bit too comfortable with that arrangement. And I'm a 7 day a week runner. And I run 7 kilometres every day. Honestly, I really do. It takes me about 38, somewhere between 38 and 42, 43 minutes to run 7K. I do it every day. I've been advised not to do it every day, that it's unhealthy to do it every day. But I've kind of become used to doing it, and I enjoy doing it. Some mornings I can barely drag myself out of bed to do it, but I do it anyway. But I didn't think that was compatible with drinking, even drinking a small amount. So I decided a couple of weeks ago to give it up. And this is coming to the end of my kind of third weekend without having a drink. And I'm proud of that. But this morning, ironically, is the first morning that I nearly, in my career, in my life, nearly slept in and didn't make it to a radio show. The future Mrs. Allen left for France yesterday. She flew out of Manchester Airport yesterday morning. She goes to France for a week every year just before Christmas. And she's there now having a good time with her family. And she said to me, oh, you'll go now to the local, you'll have a few beers. I said, well, I won't because I've not been drinking. I'm off the drink, as you know. And I won't do that. But went to bed very early last night. Watched a film on my own with my dog. Went to bed about 10:45. And woke up this morning. This is completely unlike me. At 9:35, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I woke up and I went, what's going on? This has never happened to me. I'm a guy who wakes up about 5:15 a.m. every day. And I have done my entire life. I've talked to you before about insomnia and sleep issues. But today, I made it till 9:35. And Jazz woke me up, actually, because she came in. Because we normally run much earlier than that. And I was woken up by her licking my face. I looked at the clock and I went, it couldn't be 9:35. Wow. So I nearly didn't make it because I had to, I basically had to struggle then through the papers as I do. But I'm here anyway. 5 past the hour. Did you need to hear that? Well, I told you anyway. I like to share these things. I like to share a little bit of me with you. Anyway, it is Sunday, December 2nd, 2018. I might have said the 3rd of December earlier. That would be me making mistakes like that. Before we look at the front pages of the Sunday papers, which I've got here in front of me, just want to say a couple of words about George H.W. Bush. That's George Herbert Walker Bush, who passed away aged 94 on Friday night. Was it Saturday morning? Again, forgive me. I'm really on the fly this morning. A lot of talk about him in the papers today. Obituaries in the papers yesterday. The BBC reports that he will lie in state next week in the US ahead of a day of national mourning. His body will be taken to the US Capitol. The public will be invited to pay their respects. He's the 41st, or he was the 41st US president. He was in office between 1989. Of course, he succeeded Ronald Reagan. He was Reagan's vice president. And then he was followed by, of course, Bill Clinton. He was in office between 89 and 93. There are a lot of things being written about him. There are a lot of things being said about him. And they are universally positive. And it is fairly sickening to watch. And I have been, as best as I can anyway, this morning, following this on Twitter. It's fairly sickening to see these reports coming in from politicians, men and women, not just in the United States, but around the world, kind of deifying this man almost as a wonderful man. No, he wasn't a wonderful man or anything like it. Couple of things that have really interested me about the biographies and about the, well about the obituaries, because the obituaries, of course, contain within them kind of small, what you would call synopsized biographies of this man. And there's a lot they are leaving out about George Herbert Walker Bush. They talk about how Gerald Ford appointed him to the position of the CIA director, or director of the CIA, but there's no mention of the fact that he was working for the CIA more than 10 years before this was announced. This was reported in the New York Times and the Washington Post back in the late 1980s when Bush was running for president at that time. This is true. He was working for the CIA in 1963. He was a CIA officer when President Kennedy was murdered in Dallas in 1963. We commemorated the anniversary only a few weeks ago, of course, November 22nd. And what's interesting about the fact that this is being ignored by the media is that J. Edgar Hoover wrote a memo on the 29th of November 1963, so almost 55 years ago to the day. J. Edgar Hoover, of course, was the director of the FBI. And he wrote a memo to the State Department about the assassination of Kennedy. And in the memo, Hoover said that the FBI had briefed Mr. George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency on the reaction of Cuban exiles in Miami to the assassination. Bush actually, this is true, began working for the agency in 1960 or 1961. And as he was working as a CIA officer, his cover was his job in the oil business. Now, some of my listeners have been with me since I began making programs like this back in the late 2000s when I was based in Spain. It's a wonderful thing for me that people are still listening, that began listening to me back when I began making these types of programs. Of course, I have a commercial and national media background going way back before that. But at that time, I was just basically unwittingly, unknowingly pushing the establishment agenda. I began making these types of programs in the late 2000s, and I have spoken to so many men and women, US-based men and women, former politicians, clerks, secretaries, authors, some famous, some not so famous. And there's no disputing this, that George H.W. Bush was in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963, and there is no doubt that George H.W. Bush played some part in the operation to murder or assassinate President John F. Kennedy. There's no doubt about that. And a little nugget about George H.W. Bush that a lot of people don't know, a little nugget of wisdom. George H.W. Bush is the or was the only person on planet Earth who was old enough to remember the assassination of JFK, who claimed that he had no recollection of where he was on the day. It's untenable. Anybody who was an adult when Kennedy was killed, when the moon landings occurred, or didn't occur, depending on your point of view, when Elvis died, right? They know where they were on those days when those events had or were taking place. It's like September the 11th. Could you honestly tell me that you would believe somebody who would say, well, funnily enough, I can't remember where I was on September the 11th, 2001. You'd laugh in their face, or you would think there was something wrong with them. You know, something wrong with them psychologically. So George H.W. Bush, number one, was a pathological liar. Funnily enough, Bush wrote an autobiography in 1987, or it was ghost-written, obviously with his consent, and it was called Looking Forward. And in it, Bush said that when he was appointed director of the CIA by Gerald Ford, he said it was a real shocker. That was a real shocker to me, he said, in light of the fact that he was a non-professional outsider and that he was a politician. Came as a real shock to me, says George H.W. Bush in his biography, autobiography in 1987. Nonsense. Look, I've been speaking to people over the years, as I said, some of them very well known, Kathy O'Brien, David Icke. David Icke published the claims made by Kathy O'Brien and others about George H.W. Bush years ago, about his connection to paedophiles, not just his connection to known paedophiles, George H.W. Bush, but his connection to paedophile rings. I've had people on this programme like Nick Bryant, who done an amazing job, wrote a book called The Franklin Credit Union Scandal about Omaha, Nebraska, about how abuse victims, children who were in foster homes or who were in care homes, were flown to the East Coast of the United States to be abused at parties. You know, I've talked over the years about George H.W. Bush's relationship with his connection to a man called Lawrence E. King, who was at one time the most powerful black man in America, sang the national anthem at Republican conventions, and how King ran this Franklin Credit Union and how it was a front for a cult of satanic child abusers, and the connections between that ring and George H.W. Bush. Kathy O'Brien, again, I've mentioned Kathy already in her book, Transformation of America. There was a Washington Times article in the late 1980s that exposed the fact that there were underage male escorts getting late night tours of the White House. Again, the connection between that and George H.W. Bush. The testimony of Paul Bonacci, of course. We could be here all day. You know, if you lived in the United States, if people listening from the United States want to believe, or if they believed, if they were living in a fair world, in a genuine world, George Bush would have been arrested years ago and interviewed under caution. A grand jury would have been convened to evaluate the evidence against George Bush and would have recommended that he be taken to trial. You know, read Kathy O'Brien, whose father, Kathy's father, used her for child pornographic and pictures and films, disgustingly. How close her father was to a young and up-and-coming Gerald Ford, before anybody ever heard of Ford. His connection to Bush, and what the CIA was doing with mind control programs. It's all there. And, you know, people will say, it's easy to speak about somebody after they've died. Well, I was so sure over the years of the crimes of George H.W. Bush and others around him that I was quite happy, having seen the evidence, to allow people come on my programs and basically state their case and declare why they believed that George H.W. Bush was a paedophile and possibly a Satanist. And that's all I'm going to say about that. It's a quarter past the hour. If you go back through the archives of this programme, going back to 2014, but going way back before that to TPV in London, going back to my show in Spain, I've been talking about George H.W. Bush with guests and researchers for many, many years. He was 94 when he died. If there is a hell, he's there. There's no doubt in my mind. He participated in and facilitated the operation of paedophile rings on the east coast of the United States. He was in Dallas on November the 22nd, 1963. He says he has no recollection of where he was. I have no doubt that he was part of an advanced team that had a huge part in overseeing the assassination of John F. Kennedy. That's what I believe. Nobody will mourn George Bush, not even his family, I don't believe. Let's have a look then, you and me, at the front pages of the newspapers, as we do every week on Sunday View. The Sunday Telegraph front page, it leads with Labour and DUP unite to force May's hand. You'll be a bit... You won't be surprised to learn that Brexit dominates the UK Sunday tabloids and broadsheets today. So it's just another serving up of Brexit. Lots of front page Brexit stories today. The Sunday Telegraph is saying that opposition parties will team up with the Democratic Unionist Party in Northern Ireland, which of course, as you know, has been supporting the Conservative government. Well, these parties are going to gang up to force the government to publish the legal advice it received ahead of the Brexit withdrawal agreement. They will argue, the parties, that Theresa May's refusal to reveal its contents is in contempt of Parliament. Now, this has a lot to do with a story in the Sunday Times newspaper today. Also, on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph today is a story on the front page. The headline is Tax Burden at a 50-year High for Struggling Families. This will come as no surprise to many of my listeners. The story goes, the tax burden on British households and businesses has reached a 50-year high. Britain's tax bill has hit a new high of 34.6%, smashing through the 34.3% of gross domestic product seen in the early 60s. That's according to historical data analysed for the Telegraph by the Taxpayers Alliance. It was as low as 32.7% as recently as 2015. The Taxpayers Alliance fears that Office for Budget Responsibility forecasts show that the Treasury wants to keep the tax take at this level for the next 5 years. Of course it does. Working families, most families in this country now, will have... Their circumstances mean that both parents are working. It's a fact. And despite that, most families in the country see both parents going out to work most days of the week. The tax threshold and the constant imposition of taxation and rising taxation means that these families are basically living on the edge constantly. That's what it is. Some people will say Hunger Games Society. Some people will say Agenda 21, Agenda 30, but that's the way it's going. Increasingly, families are finding that at the end of the month, they've got nothing left over to put aside. Nothing left over to save. Nothing left over for an emergency fund. Nothing. Meaning that if one half of the partnership or the couple or the marriage ends up losing his or her job, they're in desperate, desperate straits then. And as we saw a couple of weeks back, Shelter, the homeless charity, has said more and more families, that's entire families, not single people, not a man or a woman, but families are ending up homeless. In fact, Shelter said every 8 minutes. Every 8 minutes. So two families in the time that we've been speaking this morning, you and me, two families have found themselves homeless. Because we've been on air now for 20 minutes. Two families. Two and a half families. No place to live. Hunger Games Society. Agenda 21, Agenda 30. People like Preeti Patel and Owen Paterson, well-known conservatives, coming out this morning to say that this is disgraceful, that it is happening. Patel, of course, Israel's favourite. She's beloved by the Zionists, is Preeti Patel, saying that it's an embarrassment to this or any government to take so much money from hard-working taxpayers. It's all part of a plan, love, of course. Now, let's look at a big story that's getting blanket coverage this morning right across the UK media, newspapers and of course, television and radio. It's the front page of the Sunday Times. And the story is, the headline is, revealed, Brexit legal advice could sink May. Brexit legal advice could sink May. So the Sunday Times writes that Britain would be trapped indefinitely in a customs union with Brussels if MPs back Theresa May's Brexit deal. Now, this is according to leaked details of the Attorney General's legal advice, which the government has suppressed. We've already talked about this. The Sunday Telegraph is covering this as well. The government has refused thus far to release the advice given to the government by the Attorney General on the Brexit withdrawal agreement. So, 10 days or so ago, Theresa May and the European Union agreed on the terms of the Brexit withdrawal agreement. Apparently, the Attorney General has said to, or did say to Theresa May beforehand, that Britain would, on the terms of this agreement, Britain would be trapped indefinitely in a customs union with Brussels. Of course, Theresa May and Remainers in the Conservative Party have been saying this is untrue. But it isn't untrue. It's a fact. Senior ministers say that May is refusing to publish the advice because it contains a stark passage that makes clear that the UK could end up locked into this backstop arrangement with the European Union. In a letter to cabinet ministers last month, the contents of which have been disclosed to the Sunday Times, Geoffrey Cox, the Attorney General, declared the protocol would endure indefinitely. Indefinitely, he said. The government's top law officer also ruled that the only way Britain could escape the backstop would be to sign a new trade deal, which could take years. But he warned Britain could remain trapped if those talks collapsed. Basically, the only way out of this backstop arrangement is if the European Union agrees to allow the UK to leave it. This is in stark comparison, of course, to what Theresa May has been saying. She's been lying, of course. These details were confirmed to the Sunday Times by three serving cabinet ministers and the former Brexit secretary, Dominic Raab. The Sunday Times writes, this will enrage Eurosceptics and it's likely to harden opposition to the deal. Geoffrey Cox will give a statement to Parliament outlining the government's legal position tomorrow. That'll be very interesting. Here's Kevin Schofield, the editor of Politics Home, summing up what's been happening. He sums it up quite well.
If this is accurate, and I've no reason to doubt Tim Shipman, the political editor of the Sunday Times, he's saying that this political advice, that or this legal advice rather, that the Prime Minister and the Cabinet got from Geoffrey Cox, who's Attorney General, basically saying that Britain would be locked in the backstop, which is the insurance policy to prevent a hard border in Ireland indefinitely, which is just a red rag to a bull for the Brexiteers. They will not countenance that at all. Now, the Parliament passed a motion saying that the whole legal advice should be published. I think tomorrow the government's going to publish an executive summary, which obviously is not the full legal advice, so they could be held in contempt by the Speaker, which would be pretty unprecedented. So they could be forced to produce this legal advice in its entirety. And if, as I say, if this report is accurate, then the Brexiteers will absolutely.
But cabinet members will have seen
the roof.
Well,
they've already seen
and
it. But we know that the cabinet is completely split on it. It's if there's confirmation in the public sphere that that we would be locked in this backstop, and the only way to get out of it would be essentially at the EU's behest, then the Brexiteers would absolutely hit the roof, and it would absolutely sink any chance of the Theresa May winning the meaningful vote, which is already looking pretty unlikely now. So it would be really, really damaging for her, I think, if this were to come out.
Well, she's not going to win that vote on December the 11th. It doesn't look like it anyway. So what about Theresa May being held in contempt of Parliament? Well, the Shadow Brexit Secretary Keir Starmer, Labour MP, was speaking to Sophie Ridge on Sunday on Sky News this morning. He's unhappy about the Sunday Times story.
The first thing I should say is I don't want to go down this...
Let's do that again. Wrong audio there. One of those days. Speaking to Sophie Ridge, he talks about his unhappiness that the story appears in the Sunday Times, that the Sunday Times is getting a whiff of the Geoffrey Cox advice, and yet he, as the Shadow Brexit Secretary, hasn't seen it. Keir Starmer.
This morning, on the front page of the Sunday Times, you see that whilst the Prime Minister and the Attorney General, on the one hand, are saying MPs can't see this advice, leaked bits of the advice are now getting into the media. And that can only have come from the Cabinet. This advice has only been with the Cabinet. So you've got this situation where somebody in and around the Cabinet who's seen this advice has got bits of it to the Sunday Times. So the journalist and the editor of the Sunday Times knows more about this illegal advice than I do. This really is so unacceptable.
Mm. What about Theresa May being held in contempt of Parliament?
The first thing I should say is I don't want to go down this path. I said to the government 2 weeks ago and I said to them last week, do the right thing. You've been ordered to produce this advice. Just produce it. If they don't produce it tomorrow, then we will start contempt proceedings. This will be a collision course between the government and Parliament. That then has to be debated in the House, and an order can be made of contempt. Now, as I say, I don't want to go down this path. With 9 days to go before this vote, we shouldn't be dealing with contempt of Parliament. But at the moment, for the government to say, on the one hand, we're not going to vote against the order being made, and then to turn around, if it does turn around tomorrow, and say, but we're not going to comply with the order, is to get themselves into really deep water.
The government has said that it will publish a summary of the legal advice. I mean, why is that not good enough? Why do you need the full hearing? Because there is an argument, isn't there, that it's important for the government to be able to have honest and frank conversations with their legal advisers.
Of course it is, and that's why the convention is that the Attorney General's legal advice is not disclosed, except in exceptional circumstances, and these are exceptional circumstances. Now, when we had that discussion in Parliament, I was offered a summary. Now, having been a lawyer for many years, I know I've seen a lot of summaries of legal advice, and summaries are not as good as the full legal advice, and they tend to leave out the bits that the author of the summary doesn't want people to know about. So we said no to a summary. We said we want the full legal advice, and that was then what we voted on. And at the end of the debate, the Speaker asked whether the government wanted to oppose that order, and they chose not to. So I think you'll have Brandon Lewis on later, maybe ask him why they didn't vote against the order if they now say they shouldn't have to comply with it.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting couple of weeks, no doubt about that, even for those who are bored to tears by Brexit. I did notice a number of the mainstream news shows, the political shows, have done Vox Pops. A Vox Pop, by the way, is when you go out onto the streets and you ask the same question, or one question, to a bunch of people to get a flavour of what people are thinking. And it appears that people are sick of it. And maybe there's method in that as well. Maybe it was always designed to be so that you drive people absolutely mad with it. And when it does come around to the inevitable second referendum, those who felt most passionately about it back in June of 2016 might not care anymore. In terms of those who went out to vote to leave, might just not turn up. We've seen this, we saw this in Ireland twice amazingly, on Nice and on Lisbon. You know, this is how the European Union operates. It's crazy stuff. It's coming up for 5:30 the hour. I'm going to make you happy. I'm going to leave Brexit there. I really am, because I'm sure it's going to come up on the Richie Allen Show in the next few days, although I'll try and make it as interesting as I possibly can when it does come up. It's all, it's 9 days till this vote in Parliament. It's very unlikely, it's very, very unlikely that Theresa May is going to get the support of Parliament for the withdrawal bill. That is going to mean the end of Theresa May. It would do, or it would have done in any other era. What will happen then? I don't know. Keir Starmer was asked by Sophie Ridge, would Labour put forward a motion of no confidence in May, the Labour Party, and he wouldn't be drawn on that. Gina Miller has been on television today. Yes, youthful idiot Gina Miller has been on telly. David is telling me on Twitter, cartoon drunk, that Delia Smith was on the Andrew Marr show earlier, calling for another referendum. Yeah, it's all over the place. Hi to William, to William Henderson. How you doing, William? And to Paul Alawi. Paul tweets, Richie, did you see reports on the letter from Bush to Clinton on the day of his inauguration? The mainstream media is fawning over this, but to me, if nothing else, it compounds the stories of the two clans' nefarious activities. It's very interesting that Bush left a letter for Clinton that Clinton would receive when he took possession of the Oval Office. And it was, it read like a pretty nice letter, you know, good luck and don't feel too bad when people are criticising you and you're our president now and all of that. Look, Cathy O'Brien made a very compelling case to me when I interviewed her a couple of times about how Bush, George H.W. Bush, basically controlled the White House, how he controlled the Reagan White House, how he controlled things when he was president, but also how he controlled the Clinton White House. He made a very compelling case for that. Like I said, he was director of the CIA and he became the president of the United States. You know, it's incredible, really. It's incredible that more people don't put aside partisanship, don't put aside their commitment to a party or another, and just look at the cold hard facts. Forget about conspiracy theories for a minute and just look at the facts of how your country has been run, of who runs it. Go back to Woodrow Wilson crying as he left office, apologising to the American people for handing control of the country to the Federal Reserve. Go back to Eisenhower's farewell speech about the rise of the military-industrial complex. Look at JFK being murdered in broad daylight by his own government, right? When a young George H.W. Bush was there. He was there working for the CIA, overseeing the operation. Not conjecture, not conspiracy theory. Fact, folks. It's fact, you know. It's why, I suppose, this programme and other programmes as well, it's not just this programme, exist to allow people who can present evidence, not hearsay, but credible evidence to support these points of view, these theories, you know. George H.W. Bush is directly and indirectly responsible for the murder of millions of people around the world. Millions of people. And to see the eulogies, to read the obituaries in the US newspapers as I was reading them yesterday. Sickening! Because many of these journalists will know what you know and what I know. They wouldn't be in a job, of course, if they ever dared to attempt to print it. It's the way it is. Hi to D.L. Williams. Hi to Gail. William said most high streets in Scotland are now full of food banks, charity shops, and of course bookies. Ironically, that's right, it's the same wherever you go. If we take a drive, Carolyn and myself, of a weekend, which we do often, we go to a town or a city or a village in the northwest, invariably the high streets are full of charity shops. There are food banks, yes, and there are bookies everywhere. It's absolutely devastating. Hi to Natasha in Liverpool. How you doing, Natasha? Nice to hear from you this morning. Hi to David Stanford, by the way, who says, about your running habits, Richie, it will knacker your joints running every day, I know from experience. Yeah, it probably will. But anyway, Zach Frecklington tweets, I'm going to do it anyway. Good morning, Richie. 41 is dead, praise Jesus. Don't be like that, Zach. I understand the sentiment, I really do. And I don't want to come across as if I'm lecturing you, but don't allow yourself hit that low level of energy. Don't do that. That's what they're like. Don't be like them. Don't be like them. I'm physically sick, writes Zach, when all these politicians and commentators wax lyrical about a disgusting despot. That's right. It's good to be physically sick. Hi to Nancy, who's listening in Georgia, the home of the psychotic hillbilly. Good morning, Nancy. You're up very early, or you're up very late, whichever way you look at it there. Hi to Tiger Johnson, to Terminal for you, and to Lance Burkett as well. Tim Owinga as well. Thanks for listening to the programme. We're going to take a different direction from Brexit in a minute after some music. After a little bit of music. Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. Good to be with you. Are you well? One of my favourite tunes. Not heard this for ages. This is Blues Traveller, a song called Run Around. Back with more chat in a minute. Keep those tweets coming into at Richie Allen Show.
Once upon a midnight period, a walk with something in my head. I couldn't escape the memory of a phone call and of what you said. Like a game show contestant with a parting gift, I cannot believe my eyes. When I saw through the thoughts of a trusted friend, who needs to humor me and tell me lies. Yeah, humor me and tell me lies.
Music from Blues Traveller, Run Around on the Richie Allen Show. Sunday View coming up for 19 minutes to the top of the hour, or midday, because the programme is live. You might be catching the podcast or the YouTube version. Good stuff. I mean, the Bushes were members of Skull and Bones. I mean, these are satanic organisations, these secret societies, you know, Yale and all of that, where new members go through initiation ceremonies of lying naked in a coffin where the coffin is full of, shit, basically, manure and dung. And they have to lie there naked and give away their life secrets, their most innermost, their deepest innermost thoughts and the most embarrassing things, their deepest secrets. These are sick organisations. They're sick. And these rites of passage and these initiation ceremonies, the sort of things that went on or do go on at Bohemia Grove, they're not reported by the mainstream media for a reason, right? Because they don't want people to understand who these people are. That's the thing. This isn't a nonsense. This Bohemia Grove and cremation of care and ejaculating over one another and all the things that these lunatics get up to. There's a reason for it. Again, I've got to recommend Transformation of America by Cassie O'Brien. Listen back to my interviews with Cassie, which were when my YouTube channel was deleted, disappeared, but they're all on podomatic.com. You know, you can hear them. Hear how eloquent this woman is, how much sense she makes, how serious she is, and how credible, more importantly, she is. But not just her. I mentioned Paul Bonacci, and there's so many of them. You know, the lengths that the Justice Department in the United States went to cover up the allegations about Lawrence E. King and the Franklin Credit Union, the transporting of children from orphanages, from care homes, to be raped and abused on the East Coast of the United States. It's all there. It really is. This is the most difficult thing. When you've been reporting on this sort of stuff, now, I've never claimed, I never would claim to have uncovered any of that. You'll get a lot of frauds claiming to be independent media journalists talking about exposing stuff. They never exposed anything. They might have spoken to somebody who was there. They haven't exposed anything. The people who have exposed this are, again, people like Cathy O'Brien, who've exposed it by coming forward and talking about it and being able to present evidence, dates, times, documentation to support it. That's who these people are. Patrick says people need to get their minds out of their arses and start coming to terms with it. Yes, Patrick, but they can't get their heads out of their arses when they don't hear this information. They don't hear it. It isn't presented to them. It is on programs like this. And as successful as this program has been in drawing a very, very large audience to it, it's still a drop in the ocean. A drop in the ocean. It really is. You know, shadow banning, accounts being deleted, the hegemony of Facebook and Twitter mean that it's very easy to control the reach of programs like this and prevented from reaching more and more people who haven't heard this stuff before. That's the challenge going forward for the real alternative media, the genuine alternative media, not the mainstream light independent media, which still has its head in the sand when it comes to political parties and the political process. Most of them, they get mentioned every now and then on this program. We talked about one particular organisation on this programme on Thursday. I won't mention them again. They're insignificant, nonsensical. Telling you to vote for Jeremy Corbyn. There's an online magazine that's become very successful, The Canary. It's garbage. It tells you to support and believe Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party. It's a nonsense. It's a nonsense. None of those organisations go anywhere near this information. And proof of the claims made by Cathy O'Brien and so many other people is readily available to any of these organisations should they choose to be truly independent and truly alternative. But they won't touch it. They won't touch it. And no mainstream media organisation will touch it. The Washington Times came very close in the late 1980s when young underage male prostitutes were being taken to the White House. Very close, but then backed off. Justice Department, the intelligence agencies of the United States basically shut it down. People went missing all over the place. And if I wanted to know, I could dig into my own archives and give you a list as long as your arm of people who died in crazy circumstances. Planes breaking up in the air, car crashes, shooting themselves, in some cases using their opposite hand, right-handed people using their left hand to shoot themselves, and so on, so on, so on. It's all there. Terrible. You know, it's what it is. So there you are. It's depressing. Paul tweets, skull and bones initiation sounds like I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. It does a bit, doesn't it? It does a bit. You know, people like David Icke writing about this stuff has been writing about it for many years. And giving a platform, as he did, to people to come forward to talk to him about Edward Heath, to talk to him about the Clintons and the Bushes. These people that approached him and made it into the pages of his books, and thank God that they did, and thank God those books were written. They presented enough evidence, these people, that any reasonable justice department, I said this earlier on, any fair or proper justice department, lawful justice department, would have picked up on this stuff and would have interviewed the people mentioned under caution. But of course they don't. You know, it's interesting, people are listening to me speaking to Danny Jones on Thursday. Danny's got a website. He doesn't believe any of the satanic stuff, and that's fair enough. He's genuine. And he was very, very upset about false claims made about Melanie Shaw, who was abused at Beechwood Care Home in Nottingham. And he was right to raise those concerns, whatever else you might think about Danny. And he was absolutely right to claim that people have exploited Melanie Shaw and lied about the conditions and the situation that Melanie finds herself in now. But anyway, we'll leave that on Thursday. We'll leave that back there. But there's enough evidence in this country, in the UK. We heard from Mike Veal, Operation Conifer, Wiltshire Police. There's enough out there for the Metropolitan Police to start arresting people. But it's never going to happen. Never. Danny was like, you know, you've got to trust the police at some stage. No, you can't. And I said this to him on Thursday. You can't. You can't trust the police or the establishment. Especially when the police have admitted that detectives were told, when investigating child sexual abuse in the 1970s and 80s, when detectives were told, right, stop there now, that's enough, we're pulling you from the case. Any number of detectives spoke to Exaro News, which is sadly no longer with us. Again, enormous pressure put on the people behind that, right? Again, this is what happens, you see, when you start talking about this stuff. Look at what happened to Exaro News. So it's the same in the United States, to the very highest levels. The Clintons. I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to very briefly run through a couple of other front pages. The Sunday Mail, or the Mail on Sunday, has on its front page the headline, Russian TV spies caught at secret UK army base. The Mail on Sunday reporting that a TV crew from Russia's Channel 1 sparked a security alert at the UK's secret cyber warfare HQ. Wow. Defence Secretary Gavin Williamson warned the public to report anything suspicious. Apparently a journalist called Timur Siraziev, and a cameraman were monitored outside a Berkshire Army base. Well, maybe, just maybe, Russia's Channel 1 are trying to investigate the spurious claims made about the Russian government and the Russian Secret Service by the UK media and by the UK government. And in the absence of any real investigation by the UK's media, maybe these Russian film crews are just trying to do a bit of honest reporting, just maybe. Horrible story on the front page of the Sunday Mirror. I was forced to let rapist visit my child, is the headline. I was forced to let rapist visit my child. This is absolutely extraordinary, this. It's another case of a sex abuse victim forced to allow the man whom she says attacked her to see her child. The paper, the Sunday Mirror, says the victim was 14 when she was raped, when she fell pregnant. She was ordered to let her alleged rapist have contact with the youngster. Now, those of you who keep your eyes on the mainstream media or the corporate news media will, of course, know that Sammy Woodhouse, the Rotherham whistleblower, went public last week to say that she was contacted about the possibility that her son might be asked, or that she might be asked to facilitate her rapist seeing her son. What's wrong with people? Could society be any more sick than it is in 2018? What is wrong with people? Who could possibly think, even for a second, that it's okay for a rapist to be reunited with a child or to see a child? Who could, you know, somebody as verbose, as loquacious as me, I can't find the words. It's unbelievable to me that any local authority would consider as a possibility that the woman who was raped would have to allow this guy back into her life and facilitate access to him, to a child. What is going on? I did notice last week when this made the news that a number of people were tweeting out, why did some of these women carry the child? Why did they carry the term? Why did they see the pregnancy term? I don't know. I've been asked about abortion over the years. I'm not a big fan of abortion. I've often been reluctant to speak about it because I'm not a woman. I'm never going to carry a child. But I've had a big problem over the years with abortion for reasons of inconvenience. I've never liked it as an idea. You can shoot me if you want. You can criticise me if you want. I'll take it and I will read out your criticism. No problems. I've never liked the idea of people becoming pregnant and then saying, oh, it's an inconvenience, let's have an abortion. But there have always been reasons where I don't think any rational person could oppose abortion. For example, where the pregnancy represents a threat to the life of the mother, for example. Where the doctors find that there is likely to be severe mental health problems for the child in terms of, I don't want to use the word handicapped, which has been, of course, outlawed by the PC Brigade, but where a child will be severely mentally disabled and might be unable to walk and might be unable to do basic things for himself or herself as he or she gets older. I don't understand why anybody would oppose that abortion. I wouldn't oppose that. And of course, in the event that a woman is raped, if a woman is raped and through the horror of the rape becomes pregnant, who could deny the young woman or older woman, whatever, the right to terminate? I don't think you could. Why some women who become pregnant carry the pregnancy, I don't know. I have very mixed feelings about that. I don't know. It's a remarkable thing, really. I wonder, could you raise the child and disassociate the child and your relationship with your son or daughter? Could you completely disassociate your child with what happened? I don't know, but obviously some women can, and it's a remarkable thing. Maybe we need to be in complete awe of these women, in complete admiration. Now, Sammy Woodhouse is going to come on the programme with me in a few days' time. I'm looking forward to speaking with her. She's very open. She wrote a book about her experiences, and I think she's a pretty remarkable young woman. Not so much young anymore, but I think she's remarkable. I'm looking forward to meeting her, but it's quite amazing. David tweets, the one who caused the child may be a monster, but the child isn't, I suppose. Yes, mate, very good point. And I wasn't suggesting for a minute that I would see the child as a monster. Good heavens, no. Not in a million years. Not at all. I was just wondering how mum could not be always reminded of what happened. I suppose that's the simplistic way of putting it. How could you be out at the park? How could you be celebrating birthdays and not remember how you became pregnant with your young son or young daughter, whom you love. Gail tweets, I couldn't believe it either, Richie. The poor woman, it's disgusting. She went through that and then has to let her rapist have access to her child. It's disgusting. Not sure it's compulsory, Gail. It's very grey, this. I've been trying to figure this out over the last few days, what the law is about this, what the legal opinion is on matters of access for rapists whose rape has led to a pregnancy, and a pregnancy that's seen the full term and we have a baby. What's the legal advice, or what is the law around access? It's very grey, and I'm going to look into it, and I look forward to speaking with Sammy Woodhouse about that on the programme next week. And I'll ask Sammy. She's very open. I think she's been asked it many times before. I'll ask her, you know, did you consider having an abortion? And why didn't you have an abortion? Now, it's a terrible question to ask any woman, because why didn't you have an abortion almost sounds like you should have had an abortion. Not at all. Not in a million years would I think that or say that. But why did you see the pregnancy through to the end? How do you feel now? You know, and the $64 million question is, how does one not associate your relationship with your child with the terrible thing that happened? You know? Yeah, I don't know. It's a rotten world that local authorities would be even thinking about access for sexual offenders, you know, absolutely not, you know. Anyway, I think in some of these cases, it's not even clear if the rapist, the convicted rapist, has even sought access. And that's got to be taken into consideration as well. This looks like state interference or local level interference. It's not even clear that the rapist has said, oh, I want to see my child. It's not even clear. And I think it's probably a pretty easy thing to block. I mean, the extended family members, older brothers, big brothers, uncles, can make it pretty clear to the rapist, it's not a good idea to come back around here after you're released from prison. You know what I'm saying? Best thing for you would be to go somewhere else and stay there. Listen, that was Sunday View. Thanks for listening to it. It was thrown together in the shortest possible time because of my late morning. Forgive me for that, but there's been some interesting things to talk about today, no doubt, as well. Thanks for your tweets during the programme. I really appreciate them. I'll be back with you tomorrow, Monday, at 5 p.m. UK time. I will have a terrific array of guests for you this coming week, Monday to Thursday, 5 p.m. to 7 as usual. In the meantime, if it's not raining where you are, get a bit of fresh air for yourself. If it is, well, watch the snooker. There's snooker on BBC. There's no more relaxing thing to do in the world than watch a bit of snooker. Ronnie O'Sullivan plays my old pal, Ken Doherty, in York at 1 o'clock this afternoon. That's what I'll be doing, dear listener, as I'm uploading the programme to YouTube. Look after yourselves and one another. I'm going to leave you with some Bob Marley. This is a Freudian slip, this. It really is. I didn't plan this. Honest to God, I just dug this out last minute. Because I'm on my lonesome, of course, this week. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. See you tomorrow at 5. Alrighty, have a great Sunday. Bye now.